Moncrief on News Talk.
The Taoiseach Simon Harris is due to make an apology in the Dáil to the victims and their families of the Stardust fire. He is going to start speaking very shortly, we're told. In the meantime, we're joined by the editor of thejournal.ie, Sinead O'Carroll. The Journal, as you may know, produced an excellent podcast on this particular issue. Sinead, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Is your sense that the families are going to be happy and satisfied with this?
They are really hopeful that they are going to be satisfied. And that's after their meeting with Taoiseach Simon Harris yesterday, which he described as heartfelt and emotional. But they also don't want it to fall short either. So their expectations are very high that it will be specific and not just full of sentiment. So it will be a high bar to reach. We know nothing yet. They've kept their cards very tight to their chest about what specifics will be covered in the apology. So the families have gathered in the Dáil, and Hildegard Knocken, the chief whip, has just stood up for the change of order of business. So we should be hearing from Simon Harris very shortly.
Yeah, indeed. And could you give us any sense of what kind of specifics they'd like to hear?
I think they have said that they don't want to hear about redress just yet, that they would prefer to hear specifics about what exactly the state are apologising for. So are they apologising for the lack of standards or the lack of checking of the standards that happened? Are they apologising for the treatment of the families afterwards? Are they apologising for the 43-year wait for satisfactory inquests? I think there's a lot of specificity that they could get. But as Mary Lou McDonald, the leader of Sinn Féin, has also said, there is also a lot of sentiment that they could get that wouldn't actually help in the healing process.
We'll find out now, because I'm told Simon Harris is on his feet. We'll cross over to the Dáil.
This day would never come over far too many, many years. I know that you were forced to endure a living nightmare which began when your loved ones were so cruelly snatched from you in a devastating fire. Their unfinished stories became your story, the defining story of your lives and the lives of your parents and other family members who left this life before ever seeing justice. I am deeply sorry that you were made to fight for so long that they went to their graves never knowing the truth. Today we say formally and without any equivocation, we are sorry. We failed you when you needed us the most. From the very beginning, we should have stood with you, but instead, we forced you to stand against us. 48 young people lost their lives in the Stardust disaster. Many more were injured, and even more still had their lives broken and shattered forever. When I met with you in government buildings last Saturday, you reminded me of another time when four of your family members waited for days in the cold security hut, protesting your exclusion and hoping for access. I truly hope that the days since last Thursday have marked a turning point, and here today in Dáil Éireann, we finally begin to put things right. To bring you in from the cold and end the neglect of 43 years waiting and fighting for the only thing you ever wanted, the truth. Nothing else, no other agenda, just the truth. I hope this is a moment when the state, which rubbed salt in your terrible wounds, starts to help you heal. You asked me to try to really understand your experience, to really feel your pain, and to immerse myself in your world as you set out in your eloquent pen portraits to the inquest. There I found not only terrible anguish and unimaginable heartbreak, but also love, joy, laughter, personalities, promise, potential, slagging, messing, pride, dignity, talent, innocence, and the deep abyss of loss and loneliness. On February the 13th, 1981, 48 daughters and sons, husbands and wives, mothers and fathers, cousins and in-laws, uncles and aunts, neighbours, friends and co-workers went out to the Stardust on the night of the dancing competition and never came home. For their families, in the nightmare that was to follow, their loved ones not only lost their lives, they lost their identities. They were much, much more than numbers. They were bright, beautiful people. They had plans. They had dreams. They had their whole lives ahead of them. Today, as their families did in their pen portraits to the Stardust inquest, we remember each of them. Michael Barrett, who was working that night as an assistant DJ. He was wise beyond his years. He had an infectious laugh. He was 17 years old. Richard Bennett, who loved the horses and took on the role of breadwinner for his family, described as an angel in disguise. He was 17. Carol Bissett, a singer in the choir, a girl guide, quiet in her ways, much loved by all. She was 18. Jimmy Buckley, the life of every party, who loved hurling and had won a competition for his Elvis impression. Father figure, brother, hero. He was 23. Paula Byrne, always the peacemaker. She loved to draw, was the epitome of kindness. She was 19. Caroline Carey, a talented Irish dancer who took up disco dancing. A Dublin City Council clerical officer who'd recently found out she was going to be a mother. Her family asked me to tell this house today that this baby was the 49th victim of the Stardust tragedy. Caroline was 17. John Colgan, Johnny, always upbeat. He lit up every room and performed the Hucklebuck as his party piece. He was going to be an uncle. He was 21. Jacqueline Croker, a heart of gold, who brought music into her family's lives on her red record player and used her wages to dress and treat her brothers and sisters. She was 18. Liam Dunn, training to be a butcher, which he loved, with a passion for music. He was a loving boy with many friends. He was 18. Michael Farrell, his family's bundle of joy. He worked at Cadbury, a dapper young man who always tried to look his best. He was a deep thinker, a diarist. He was 26. Michael French, Horsey, an auto electrician and the rock of his family, a role model who worked hard to share his wages and thought of everyone else before himself. He was 18. David Flood, a rocker at heart who loved the guitar and was known for his Jagger swagger. He never missed a day of work and he had all of life's possibilities ahead of him. He was 18. Thelma Fraser, gentle, kind, loved Friday nights and disco moves, remembered by her brothers and her sisters for her treats, her hugs, her kisses. She was 20. Josephine Glenn, quiet, gentle, always smiling and happy, a second mam to her brothers and sisters. She left school to help support her family. She was 16. Michael Griffiths, happy, outgoing, with a great, great work ethic and a generous nature. He loved family occasions. He loved Christmas and could always be heard laughing, singing, playing music. He was 18. Robert Hillock, Bobby. Outgoing, hardworking. He loved football and boxing. He was very close to his late brother, Bill. He was 20. Brian Hobbs. His sister was known as his Mammy Pat. He was academically inclined. He excelled at Catering College, winning a gold medal for Ireland in competition. He was ambitious. He was going places. He was 21. Eugene, Huey Hogan, a skilled carpenter, a sharp dresser with a beautiful voice who could hit the high notes, a loving, caring father. He was 24. Murty Kavanagh, caring, kind, good-natured. He was a heating insulator who looked after his father. He loved the Dubs and Man United. He was 27. Martina Keegan. Not just a daughter and a sister, but a best friend and a confidant. She dreamed of being a model. She was studious and hardworking. She was 16. Mary Keegan. Beautiful inside and out. Shy at heart, but very fun-loving and sociable. A teacher to her younger siblings. She excelled at school and work. She was 19. Robert Kelly, nicknamed Spikey for his hairstyle. He worked on the B&I boats and loved it. He was a lover of music and embroidery. He was 17. Mary Kennedy, warm, caring, lively and fiercely protective. Dancing as soon as she could walk. Her personality and her style were as bright as her smile. She was 17. Mary Kenny. Popular, kind, funny, passionate about fashion and dancing. A fan of Leeds United. She'd just turned 19. Margaret Kiernan. A friend to all who loved sport and loved socialising, loved to sing Roxanne, and who dreamt of a happy future in a house next door to her best friend Deirdre. She was 18. Sandra Lawless. Happy, kind, funny, selfless, a Girl Guide leader, a swimmer who won awards for life-saving. She loved hiking and camping in the Dublin mountains. She was 18. Francis Lawler, an army man with a love of style. He'd great leadership skills and he never liked to leave his beautiful baby, Lisa. He was 25. Maureen Lawler, a loving and devoted mother to Lisa. Full of dreams for the future, she shared an interest in fashion with her husband, Francis. He's always immaculately dressed. She was 26. Paula Lewis was her mother's right-hand woman and her father's pride and joy. She was a second mother to her siblings and her little sister's roommate. She was 19. Eamon Lockman, a protector of his brothers and sisters who remember the crossbars on his racer, a car enthusiast, a music lover with a deep laugh. He was 18. Donna Mahon, a lovely person who loved her job working in the newsagents, meeting people and being part of the community. She plans to go to Santa Ponsa for her 18th birthday. She was 17. Helena Mangan. Kind, caring, loving, brave, strong. Her daughter Samantha was the centre of her life. She loved to dance. She was 22. George McDermott. A gentle music lover with a cheeky grin. He loved to bop and playing cards with his pals. He was 18. Marcella McDermott. Happy, singing and dancing with the most gentle and kind nature, especially with children. She was 16. William McDermott, Willie. A gentle giant with a beautiful smile, soft-voiced, witty, caring, kind. He loved the weekend, the Dubliners, and being on Hill 16. He was 22. Julie MacDonald. Caring, helpful, thoughtful. A hard worker and provider. She loved football. She coached a local team. She was mad for Elvis. She was 20. Teresa MacDonald. The focal point of her family. She was brave. She stood up for what she believed in and she loved all animals. She was 16. Gerard McGrath. Independent and full of energy. Talented with his hands. A dapper music lover. He had a passion for the natural world. And a love of birds. He was 21. Caroline McHugh. An avid reader. Irish dancer. Swimmer. A member of the local CB radio club who did well in school and work. She was 17. James Miller, a sailor who travelled the world, so happy to be engaged, to be married and ready to settle down and raise his family. He was 20. Susan Morgan, a tomboy who loved football and walks and Dublin. She was bubbly, she was funny, she was full of life. She was 19. David Morton, football mad and named Chesty, for preferring to receive the ball there than have it mess up his hair. He was mischievous, he was charismatic, he was independent, and he had big dreams for the future. He was 19. Castine Muldoon. Good-natured. Thoughtful. She wanted to be a nurse and cared for all those around her. She was 19. George O'Connor. A gentle homebody with a creative spirit. He loved science fiction. He was attending his very first dance. He was 17. Brendan O'Mara. Talented Irish dancer and sportsman. He'd help anyone out in any way he could and never had a hair out of place. He was 23. John Stout. Sensitive, gentle, also an Elvis fan. He likes snooker. He planned to become a painter and decorator to contribute to the family household that he loved. He was 18. Margaret Thornton, a lover of fashion, music, skilled in dressmaking and tailoring. She loved the pictures, concerts, and especially discos. She was 19. Paul Wade, a people person, good at chatting. He made friends easily, someone you simply couldn't stay mad at. He was 17. Today, Las Kiancorla, we think as well of the hundreds of people who were injured and who were scarred forever, physically and mentally, scarred by fire and scarred by survival. We think of the people working in the Stardust, the waiters, the waitresses, the doormen, the DJs. We think of the frontline workers who fought to save lives on the night, the fire crews, the ambulance and hospital staff, the Gardaí, the army, the taxi drivers. And I want to acknowledge those who came forward many years later and told their stories at the inquest. I want to acknowledge the Dublin communities who were good neighbours to the Stardust families and communities right across Ireland who supported them for 43 years. 43 years since the momentous, devastating loss that was experienced in those early hours of Valentine's Day, 1981. Families who had last seen their loved ones getting dressed up in their best freshly pressed outfits, getting ready to meet friends, going out for a dance, suddenly hearing of a fire in the Stardust, or the sound of sirens, or the knock on the door. And then the escalating panic as the realisation dawned that a disaster was unfolding. To the desperation of searching, of hoping, of praying that your family member or friend had left, had escaped, somehow wasn't there when the fire started and spread. To the frantic rounds of the Stardust car park, the hospitals and the morgue. To the dismay of confirming the identity of lost loved ones by recognising melted jewellery or an engagement ring or a wedding ring, clothing or a digital watch. With a loved one's name replaced by a number or that dreaded label, unidentified. Or waiting many years for confirmation of identity, long after the agonising pain of loss. And the dreadful aftermath, the body bags, the numbers, the rushed funerals, the closed coffins, the shattering of families, every subsequent event marred and scarred, tainted and tarnished. The surviving children whose rearing years were done through a sea of tears. Mothers afraid to hug, afraid to love, in fear of losing another child. Broken hearts, broken lives, broken marriages. Being accused of telling lies, the smear of arson attached to their loved ones. Having their grief and their sadness misconstrued as madness. A sense of threat and suppression when they simply started looking for answers. Stigma heaped upon sorrow bred shame and silence. The intergenerational and communal ripple effect of so much agony and the lack of closure. The families gathered here today and their loved ones who perished. The family members who are no longer with us and all those who suffered horrific injuries were the victims of a mass tragedy. In such shattering circumstances, the most basic expectation must surely be that the state comes to the aid of its citizens and supports them in the terrible aftermath. Instead, it is to our great and eternal shame that far from the warm embrace of a caring state, the Stardust family has experienced a cold shoulder, a deaf ear, and two generations of struggle for truth and justice. Instead, it is to our great shame that state processes heaped misery upon tragedy for the Stardust families. I am so deeply sorry that your first bid for justice ended with suspicion being cast on those who had died or survived on that catastrophic night. With your pain and your grief compounded by stigma and rejection, families were forced to fight for decades to obtain the vindication that you won last Thursday when the inquest returned a verdict of unlawful killing in the case of your 48 family members. For all of this, as Taoiseach, on behalf of this state, I apologise unreservedly to all the families of the Stardust victims and all the survivors for the hurt that was done to them and for the profoundly painful years of struggle for the truth. I apologise to the families that those present on the night of the fire were wrongly criminalised through the allegation of arson, which was an attack on their reputations. I say today clearly in Dáil Éireann, every person there was innocent. I say today the truth is now known, and I say today not only were they innocent, they were unlawfully killed. The government accepts the findings of the coroner's court. The government accepts the recommendations of the jury. This was formally noted at our cabinet meeting this morning, and the Minister for Justice and other relevant ministers have been asked to report back on the implementation of its recommendations. I've asked my own department to prepare proposals to appropriately commemorate the disaster as requested by the families, and I look forward to engaging with and agreeing a way forward with the families on this. Last Saturday, when I met with you here in government buildings, I listened to the pain, the grief, and the righteous anger. It is beyond comprehension how, in the midst of horrific suffering, you found the endurance and the fortitude to form the Stardust Victims Committee and start your long, long fight. But that moment has led to this one. This moment where we say your loved ones are no longer lost in the smoke and the dark and the fire, but are brought back into the light. Where we fulfil the promise of the proclamation of a republic and say without question, they are our cherished children. I want to pay tribute to three of the women who sat in that cold hush outside government buildings 15 years ago who are here with us today. Gertrude Barrett, Antoinette Keegan and Bridget McDermott. Their incredible spirit in refusing to be kept out in the cold helped lead us to this moment today. However, very sadly, a fourth woman who was there, Christine Keegan, and her late husband John didn't live to see this day. I want to turn to the words of Christine and the questions that she asked, which was never answered in her lifetime. Christine said in a statement she prepared for the inquest, but that she never got to deliver, "The Stardust fire took all our happy family days away from us. It took away all our belief and faith, and it took away our trust with successive governments over the years. We felt abandoned and all alone and left like lambs to a slaughter. Everything brushed under the carpet to keep the truth hidden." I would like to ask a question to the government, the establishment and its agencies. What did we families of the deceased victims of the Stardust fire ever do on the government to deserve this ill treatment and constant systemic abuse that we have sustained for the past 38 years? Today I want to answer that question. You did nothing wrong. The institutions of this state failed you. The institutions of this state let you down. These brave families should never have had to walk alone. We should have been by your side. We should have walked with you. We were not. We did not. And for that, we are truly sorry. We should have offered counselling. We should have provided answers. We should have ensured that the truth came out. As Christy Moore recognised in his powerful song about the tragedy, the victims waited in vain. Except it wasn't for 4 years. It was for 43. Today, we honour the 48 children who never came home. Today, we apologise to the families, to the survivors, to those who were denied the truth for too long. I want to thank the inquest jury for delivering a just verdict last Thursday. I want to thank the senior coroner, Dr. Myra Cullinan, for her sensitive and meticulous conduct of the inquest. The terrible reality is that we will never know for certain how many lives were ended by this tragedy. Beyond the 48 whose names we know, there are countless others whose lives were turned to ash on that terrible, terrible night. Their hopes and their dreams were destroyed twice over. First by the fire, and then by successive failures of this state to do what was right. And for that, I am truly sorry.
That was Taoiseach Simon Harris speaking there. As you heard, if you heard the entire speech, he named each of the 48 people who died there, gave a small pen portrait of them, also acknowledged the many people who were injured that night, the anguish of the families, and indeed the anguish and damage suffered by many other people as a result, not just of the fire itself, but of the cover-up, or the, at least the failure to acknowledge what actually happened there that night. Sinead O'Carroll is still with us. Sinead, do you think that was enough?
But there's a lot to get through there, and I don't think I'm the person to answer that. I think the families will have to digest everything that was said, but there was a lot in it, and I think there will be pouring over of what exactly he apologised for, but he did say the word sorry, deeply sorry, and I apologise as Taoiseach multiple times. A couple of things that I would pick out: that he was deeply sorry for having to, the families for having to wait 43 years to have to fight. And he said that he wanted to say formally and without equivocation, we are sorry we failed you when you needed us most. From the very beginning, we should have stood with you, but instead we forced you to stand against us. He said that they were only looking for the truth and were made to wait for that. I think then that, I think that's what I initially thought he was apologizing for, but he then, after the pen portraits that you mentioned there, went on again to, I think, recognize things that will make the families feel seen and heard and maybe vindicated as well. That he mentioned the broken marriages, the smear of arson, the fact that they were being made to feel or portrayed as mad rather than just being grief-stricken and sad, the fact that their questions were suppressed, which led to more sorrow and more stigma. He also recognised the intergenerational trauma, which I think for the area and for the families involved will be very important to have on record. He recognised that it was that everyone involved was a victim of mass tragedy, and that the basic expectation after a mass tragedy would be the state to come to the aid of the victims and their families, but to the shame of the state, they were met with a deaf ear and a cold shoulder rather than a warm embrace. I think all of those things will go a long way, I think, for the family. But for me, one of the biggest things that he did apologise for, and I think the specificity that we talked about before he stood up, was that he apologised for the fact that many of the victims were criminalised at the mention or the probability of arson being involved in that first tribunal, and that was an attack on their reputation. He said very clearly that every person who was killed in that fire, injured, or who escaped the fire was innocent, and not only were they innocent, they were unlawfully killed. I think that will hopefully work to vindicate the families and the fight for justice. So not only did he apologise for what the state processes that were implemented after the fire, but the wait of 43 years to finally get to the truth, and the fact that he paid tribute to the three women who were in the gallery who have been fighting since day one, as well as Christine and John Keegan, who unfortunately have passed away since. So I think there's a lot there for the family to look at, and you know, I think maybe he has ticked a lot of the boxes that they would have felt needed to be said and put on record by the Taoiseach.
Sinead, thanks a million for speaking with us today. That was Sinead O'Carroll, their editor of the journal.ie.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.